Thank you so much, Rabbi Shur. Good morning, everybody. Good vach, Shavuot Tov. Thank you so much. And it's a great great honor to be here as we gather virtually this morning to learn a little bit together. This is a little different than the Kol Yom Rishon experience that I remember. But I guess for those of you who have been attending regularly, you're probably used to this already. So what I'd like to do, I'm just going to pull it up right now. I have a source sheet that I'm going to send out. I'm sending it out right now in the chat box, and I'm also going to share my screen with you. So if you find it more comfortable to be able to download it and to look at it that way, that's fine. And this way you'll have it afterwards. But if you'd rather not, or if that's too much of a distraction at the moment, I will share my screen momentarily. So what I'd like to talk about this morning, as indicated in the title, is the topic of dreams. In case it's not obvious, I'll just point out that already yesterday, as we had Parshas Vayetze, but really through the end of Sefer Bereishis, dreams play a very, very central role in the evolution of the story of the beginning of our people. Yaakov dreams in the beginning of Parshas Vayetze, has a dream later towards the end of the Parsha, and certainly as we head into Parshas Vayeshev and Miketz, so dreams are not just, minor details in the story, but really sort of drive some of the most dramatic and really some of the most momentous and significant events that occur in Sefer Bereishis. And so therefore, it's, I think, incumbent upon us to sort of stop and ask ourselves, what does this mean? Not so much within the context of Sefer Bereishis, which would certainly be a worthy discussion of itself, but just in terms of our own experience, each and every one of us dream. Some of us perhaps may dream more than others. Some may have more impactful, dramatic dreams. Some of us may remember our dreams the next day more than others. But we all can relate to the concept of dreaming. And I imagine I'm not the only one who wonders from time to time, so, what does this mean? How am I to relate to a dream from the perspective of halacha and hashkafa? You know, what is the sort of the Jewish attitude, if you will, towards dreaming, given the fact that, the slot that I've been allotted over here at this point is a little less than 45 minutes. So obviously there's only so much that we're going to cover in this time. But what I'm going to try to do in the time allotted is to present somewhat of an overview, of course, hoping that everybody will walk away with something new. But there's certainly a lot more here to discuss. So if you're interested in learning more and discussing this more and perhaps continuing the conversation or maybe being exposed to more Mar Makomos, I encourage you certainly to reach out to me, and I'm happy to continue the conversation with you offline, if you will. So with that, I'm now going to share this very much. So we are now going to talk about the Be'inyan Chalomot, the topic having to do with dreams. And as I mentioned, we're going to begin at the beginning of yesterday's parsha. The Torah tells us that Yaakov has a dream in the beginning of the parsha. Vayachalom v'hine sula mutzavartza. Yaakov has a dream, and he dreams of a ladder that is ascending the heavens. V'rosha mangi ha-shamayim v'hine malachim elokim olim yordim bo. And there are, as we know, angels that are ascending and descending this ladder. Yaakov wakes up, and he realizes that he's in such a special place. And he has immediately sort of regret that he went to sleep in such a special place, the place that will ultimately become the Makom HaMikdash. And when he got up, he was so moved, and he was so moved and taken by this experience that he committed himself in a way that he had never before. He expressed a very, very sincere desire to commit himself, to devote himself to the Ribbono Shel Olam. He took a neder. And so this dream wasn't just an incredible, awesome personal experience for Yaakov Avinu, but it really was instrumental in terms of helping him focus at this very important and significant time in his own life, and really was foundational in terms of the way we relate not just to Yaakov Avinu and this point in his life, but this very extraordinary place. Now, you would, if this were the only source that we would look at, so we would reach the conclusion that dreams are rather significant, they really matter. What you dream is sort of a window, if you will, into another whole part of our universe that we wouldn't necessarily otherwise be aware of. And leave us with the impression that, you know, that, you know, this is really amazing. Dreams are great. You know, if you have a great dream, or for that matter, any kind of dream, you're really getting, you know, an insight into something that would not otherwise be accessible to you. But that's not necessarily the full story, because there is a pasuk in Zechariah, and the pasuk says as follows, Ki hatrafim dibru oven, that the idols, they speak falsehood. They speak whatever they speak is of no significance. V'hakosmim chazu sheker. And the sorcerers, those who engage in different forms of sorcery and witchcraft, so what they speak, what they claim to see, is all false. V'chalomos hasham v'daberu. And dreams, the dreams that they share, the dreams that they tell, this is all shav. Hevel yinachemun. If they give anybody comfort, so this is all in vain. There's nothing real to it. Akin nasu kamotzon yanu ki ein roeh. And therefore the Navi declares that the people who follow the Trufim, the Kosmim, and those who tell their dreams, they're being led aimlessly through this sort of through this desert of falsehood, and you know they're lost. They're not being properly guided. The key phrase in this pasuk is chalomos hashav yedaberu. The Gemara is gonna, as we're gonna see in a moment, is gonna reference this pasuk as a very clear declaration that dreams are shav. On the other hand, the Torah also tells us in Parshas Baloscha, in source number 3, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Aaron and Miriam at the time that they spoke about their brother Moshe with some degree of disrespect and skepticism as to why Moshe was different. So in this very, very important moment, HaKadosh Baruch Hu delineates how it is that Moshe is considered to be fundamentally and qualitatively in a very, very significant way, a completely different type of prophet than anyone who had ever achieved prophecy before and after. And what it says over there is, Hashem says to Aaron and Miriam, Vayomer, Shimu no dvarai. Listen carefully to what I'm going to tell you. Im yeh nevi'acham Hashem, if and when HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to his prophets, Bamar o elov esvado b'chalom adaber bo. I speak to them, I appear to them in a vision, and I speak to them adaber b'chalom in a dream. So we see now that a dream is not shav, quite to the contrary. HaKadosh Baruch Hu declares that he in fact communicates with his prophets through dreams. This is a point that if we don't remind ourselves from time to time, and the Rambam really goes, really, I would say, in somewhat uncharacteristically, in really extensive detail in Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah, where he defines and describes the definitions of Nevuah in general, and particularly showing how Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy was different. But we see that whenever HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to prophets, they're not awake. So all the descriptions that we find in the Torah, in the Nevi'im, the Ksuvim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is interacting with certain people and speaking to them, with the exception of Moshe Rabbeinu, who was in a state of complete consciousness, panim el panim adaber bo, Kashe yudaber isha reyehu, the way a person would speak to another, everyone else is in some semi-conscious state, maybe completely or partially asleep, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is appearing in a dream. So which one is it? Is it chalomos hashav yedaberu? Is it that dreams are just completely false? Or is it b'chalom adaber bo? So this is not my question. The Gemara points out that it would seem to be a contradiction here. Before I share that Gemara with you, I would suggest that perhaps the Gemara in Brachos Daf Nun Zayin Mebeis in source number 4 is already trying to sort of reconcile the tension between these two psukim and tells us that a chalom is echad mishishim lenevuah, that a dream typically is 1/60th of prophecy, meaning that yes, in fact, it could be that even somebody who's not a genuine prophet does have some sort of access. His antenna are able to pick up on certain signals, if you will, when a person is asleep and they're tapping into something that they wouldn't otherwise be able to while they're awake. But this is not a complete and total prophecy. This is not anything close to whatever clear vision a prophet would actually have. If anything, it's like 1/60th. We know we're familiar with the concept of being something be batal b'shishim. It's almost like there's no trace of it whatsoever, but it's there. There is something there. So Chazal tell us, you know, a dream is like 1/60th, which, by the way, is not very helpful if you're, you know, if you're looking to interpret your own dream or somebody else's dream.
The Gemara tells us on source number 5, well, around the same sugya in Brachos, Shmuel, ki avichozi chalma bisha, when Shmuel personally would have a bad dream, so Amar, he quote the pasuk from Zechariah, v'chalomos hashav yedaberu. So when he had a bad dream, he would say, dreams don't mean anything. He would quote the first pasuk. Ki avichozi chalma tavo, however, when he would have a good dream, he'd say, v'chalomos hashav yedaberu. He would say, what, you think those dreams don't mean anything? V'ksev, it says, v'chalom adaberbo. So, you know, what's going on over here? So either you could say that Shmuel basically said what the Gemara seems to be saying, that the each pasuk is referring to a different type of dream. A good dream is true and a bad dream is false. Probably that's not what Shmuel meant to say. What Shmuel was either doing over here was basically saying, listen, I have no idea. I have no idea if the dream is real or not, but I'm going to take a sort of a positive attitude and say, listen, if it's a good dream, I hope it was real, and if it was a bad dream, so acholam asashavi debeiru. It could also be, I'll just whet your appetite, though, no, I'm not going to give you another marker for this right now, but there are other midrashim which basically indicate that the way you interpret, or perhaps the way others interpret your dreams, could impact on a certain level what the dream actually means. So it sounds a little strange, but the attitude that we bring to the interpretation of our own dreams may in fact inform and sort of guide, you know, how that dream ultimately impacts us, if at all. And Shmuel maybe sort of, you know, indicating that the attitude, the way we look at our dreams, may impact the way they unfold. You know, I'm not sure, but there may actually be some sort of a psychological explanation for this. You know, if you believe that a dream means something and you act upon that or you don't act upon that, so to incident, a dream becomes almost like sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy, literally, as we've seen. Could be. The Gemara then points out that you have an explicit stira over here. Rava points out you have a stira. Ksiv, one pasuk says, b'chalom adaber bo. Uksiv, and it says, b'chalom asashav yedaberu. Which one is it? So says the Gemara, lokashia, kana yidei malach, kana yidei shade. Now this is also like, what does that mean? One is when it comes from a malach. Presumably, when a malach is delivering a message, and the malach is the source of the dream, so then that is, there is some nevuah there. However, when it comes like a shade, which we usually translate as a demon, some other force, so then it's chalomos hashav yedaberu. Again, that's a very interesting way of resolving this contradiction, but it's not very instructive, and it's not very enlightening in terms of a person's ability to interpret their own dreams. After all, if you have a dream that is very impactful, whether it's a good dream or a bad dream, but how do you know if it came from a malach yashed? You have no idea. Nevertheless, the Gemara tells us that when a person has a dream and it is worrisome to them, there is something that they should do. The Gemara in Brachos Daf Nun Hei Amud Beis, you see in source number 6, tells us that if a person has a dream and he doesn't know what it means, and the impression you seem to get is that it is concerning this individual, so what he should do is he should go to shul at the time of Birkas Kohanim, when the Kohanim are doing the Siyas Kapayim, and at that time, he should say the following tefillah. And in fact, this tefillah should sound familiar to you because it's a tefillah that is printed in the Sidurim and the Machzorim. When we do Birchas Kohanim, there is a tefillah, Rebono Shalom, Ani Shalach, V'chalamosai Shalach, Chalom Chalamti, V'nidei Mahu. The person goes on to say, listen, Hashem, I had a dream, I don't know what it means. And then we say something very strange. And again, here, I'm not going to elaborate with much detail, but I think it's important to just note the very, very peculiar formulation that we use in this tefillah, that a person is basically declaring, listen, I had a dream, and I don't know what it means. But you know what it means. So, im tovim heim, if my dream is good, chazkem v'yamtzeim. So then, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please, I ask you to strengthen it, meaning give it, literally, give it chizik, halavai it should come true. K'chalamosov shel Yosef. V'im trichem refuah, which is a very strange language, if it requires literally a cure, meaning if there is something about the dream that is foreshadowing something that can be detrimental to my well-being, either to my health or maybe just my, you know, my situation in life, so then I ask that the dream should have a refuah, should have a refuah. And just as kishem shehafachto kilaz bilam arasha lebracha, just as HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you transformed the klala of Bilam, when Bilam wanted to curse Klal Yisrael, you transformed that klala into a bracha. So too, you should transform all of my dreams to good. Now this tefillah raises more questions than it answers. And I can point you in the direction, I forget which volume, but the Sefer Shi'urei Das, of Rav Elio Meir Bloch, one of the previous Tells of Rosh Yeshiva, So he has several pieces where he talks about what exactly this means and how we can understand the concept of refua and hafichas chalom. Because you would just simply say, listen, if I had a bad dream, if my dream is bad, it shouldn't come true. That's what we would say. But that's not, we don't say over, it shouldn't come true. We say it needs a refua. Somehow, again, there should be this sort of transformation. So in less than 1 minute, what he basically explains is that if a person has a dream, and that dream, in fact, has some significance, that basically means that sort of there's something underway. There is already something that's sort of coming through the channels. The way HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world is that there's a gezar din, and it's on my, it's headed my way. And so therefore, to say it shouldn't come true, it's too late for that. But it's not too late for me to get out of the way, so to speak. It's not too late for there to be something which will redirect this gezar din, whether it's, you know, a change that I make myself, in all likelihood, so through some combination of tshuva, tefillah, tzedakah, ma'avir nesaros gezera, right? So that in a very, very, I'm not going through his entire essay right now, but in short, that's basically the way he explains fundamentally what's going on in this tefillah. But the point is that the Gemara says that if you have a bad dream, or if you have a dream you don't know what it means, it's appropriate to daven. And the Gemara tells us specifically we should do so at the time of the Nesias Kapayim. Why Birchas Kohanim? Also a very good question we're not going to discuss right now. Rabbi Nebuchadnezzar explains in source number 7 that basically, if you're dreaming, and the dream again is something that's of significance, in all likelihood the dream has been caused by one of three things. Number one, he says, it could be something you ate. And maybe you find that a little refreshing to know Rabbi Nebuchadnezzar basically says, listen, the way we eat does definitely impact us in many, many ways, including what we dream at night. That if we eat a lot of food, perhaps, and we eat, let's say, very heavy food before we go to sleep, so we could potentially, it has obviously a whole, you know, I imagine there are many, you know, effects physiologically upon a person who eats a lot. And so this can definitely affect their dreams. Obviously, if you dream a certain way because of something you ate, he says, so that's of no significance whatsoever as far as the dream is concerned. Hakolin yonei hevel dvarim b'talem. He said it could also be that a dream is inspired or brought about by what a person is thinking about during the day. So if let's say that I'm very preoccupied with something, I'm working on a project, or there's some very, very, a big thing going on in my life, something I'm involving myself in, the halavite should be a good thing, I'm planning a wedding, and I'm spending night and day and involved in all sorts of discussions. And at night, what do I dream about? I dream about weddings. So what does it mean? It means I'm thinking about weddings during the day. So therefore, I dream about weddings at night. So it's not such a mystery. But then he says, there's another chalom, haba min b'nei chizuk ha-nefesh. It could be that a dream is coming, not because of anything that I ate, not because of anything I'm thinking about, but mipnei chizuk ha-nefesh, u'amiti aroi mikulam shimikochas ha-nefesh. There is something, a sort of a koach, a potential that we have inside of our souls, that when we go to sleep at night, what he describes over here is in our bodies sort of, they shift into this sleep mode, if you will, you know, sort of like our computers do that. They have this sleep mode where everything sort of silences, and the body, you know, uses its own reserves differently. So now the soul is able to perceive certain things that perhaps are going on around us all the time, but we're not able to tap into because we're so distracted by the noise within our life. And when a person goes to sleep at night, so like I said before, sort of the antenna go up, and every once in a while you pick up on something, and maybe that's something, he says, v'zoi nevuah katana. That could be some sort of like a mini prophecy. So practically speaking, what does a person do if he has a concerning dream? I mean, if you have a good dream, there's not really all that much to do, you know, right? If we have a good dream, it makes us feel good. Usually we forget about it within several hours. If it's a really, really impactful dream, we may carry it for the rest of the day, but there's nothing you need to do. Alavai, it should be true. It should come true if it's that kind of dream. But what if you have a bad dream? And we've all had that. We've all had dreams that are either concerning, which we don't know what they mean, or maybe there is something very, very clear and explicit, and it haunts us. So what do we do? So the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Yud Aleph, teaches in source number 8, in the name of Rav, that Yofet Tanis L'Chalom Ke'esh L'Na'ores. Amar Chizba Bayom V'Amar Yosef Afilu B'Shabbos. The Rav basically says, listen, if you have a bad dream, there is something you can do, and that is you could fast. And it's very effective. It's very, very effective. However, Rav Chizda says, it's only going to be effective if you fast that day. You can't say, well, I have a bad dream, but you know, today I'm supposed to go out to lunch with my friends, so you know what, I'll fast tomorrow. No. It's bo bayo. It has to be that day, the morning that you wake up. And Rabbi Yosef says, this is the biggest chiddush of all, afilu b'Shabbos. Even on Shabbos. Now, why is that a chiddush? Because normally, we would never fast on Shabbos. Not allowed to fast on Shabbos. We have an obligation to have not one, not two, but three meals. Oneg Shabbos. Rabbi Yosef says, yeah. But yafa tanis lechalom ke'esh le'na'ores, and even on Shabbos. The Shulchan Aruch paskins this way, although as we're going to see, the Shulchan Aruch revises and updates, so to speak, the position over the course of several se'ifim in Simon Reish Pei Ches, in source number 9. Mechaber says, "Mutter lehisanos bo b'tanas chalom kedei sheyikra gezar dino." This is Hilchos Shabbos. On Shabbos, you're permitted to fast a tanas chalom in order that that should bring about a kriyas gezar din. But tzarech lehisanos b'yom rishon. But then he says, after you fasted on Shabbos, you have to fast again on Sunday. Kedei sheyischaper mashibitel on Shabbos. You're fasting on Sunday to be mechaber for the fact that you fasted on Shabbos. However, but if that's difficult to fast for two consecutive days, so then fine, you don't have to do consecutive days, you'll do it another time afterwards. In other words, yeah, you're right. If you have a bad dream on Friday night, you should fast on Shabbos. But the fact that you had to fast on Shabbos, that itself warrants some kapara later. But in the moment, I have no choice what I need to do. The Mishnah Berurah points out something very important over here. And that is, in general, when it comes to fasting, we should never think that a fast is like this, you know, quick fix that will solve every problem in the world. The Mishnah Berurah reminds us, by the way, if you're fasting, so obviously your day should be one in which you are preoccupied with Torah, Tefillah, and Vidoy even on Shabbos, which is wild. And then he points out people who can't fast, women who are pregnant or nursing, or people who are weak. So then giving tzedakah as a pidyon nefesh would also be appropriate, and people shouldn't push themselves more than they can go. And he quotes from the Taz over here something which we saw similar in the Rabbeinu Bechai before, and that is that if a person is thinking about something during the day and he has a dream about that very thing that night, so then you should not fast on Shabbos. Because you could assume that in all likelihood, whatever you dreamt came from what you were thinking about. So if a person watches a scary movie before they go to sleep, obviously not on Friday night, but and then, you know, he has a nightmare in his dreams, and like, you know, it's very similar to, okay, so it's no wonder why you had that dream. It was on your mind. It was the last thing on your mind before you went to sleep. So if that's what happened, the Taz says, don't fast on Shabbos. Because fasting on Shabbos is a big b'dieved. And you shouldn't fast on Shabbos unless there's really reason to assume you must. Mechaber goes on to say in the next sif, there are those who say that really you don't fast on Shabbos, Tanis Chalom, unless the dream is something that repeats three times. If once, okay, you could dismiss it. Second time, that's coincidence. Three times already, it's almost like someone trying to send you a message. You know, when you're like getting, the phone rings, you know, and you, unknown caller, so you ignore it. And then you get another one. And if the third time, many people will pick it up. Like, well, who's trying to reach me? So over here, if you have a dream three times, and so then, you know, then already you can fast on Shabbos. And then the Mechaber says, there's another opinion, says, B'zman hazein l'sanos tanos chalom b'Shabbos. But then you have another opinion, says, you know, today, and remember the Mechaber is 500 years ago, today already, you shouldn't fast on Shabbos tanos chalom, because we're not really b'kiyim. We're not experts in knowing the interpretations of our dreams. We don't know what's good, what's bad. You know, you have a dream, you think you know what it means, but you don't really know what it means. And then, he goes on to say, but there are certain dreams where we have a Mesorah tradition that if you have these specific dreams, so then you would fast even on Shabbos. Roa Sefer Torah Shenisraf, if a person sees a Sefer Torah that burns, or has a dream of Yom Kippur B'Shas Ne'ilah, or Koriz Beso Ashin of Shenaflu, or the beams of his house, or his teeth are falling out. So then, and he goes on to give some other examples. But the idea is that there's a tradition, if you will, that these dreams in particular have very specific messages that are embedded within them, and this should be of concern to you. And then the Mishnah Berurah says, you see sort of the chipping away over here, that af be'elu agimul, even these, a person should not fast on Shabbos, unless hatanis oneglo, unless he enjoys fasting. What does it mean he enjoys fasting? Not that he normally enjoys fasting. Kagon shenafshu agumalav, a person dreams, I mean, God forbid, but you imagine a person has a dream that a Sefer Torah is burning. That could be very, very
distressing. You wake up in the morning and you're all stared. Like, well, what does that mean? And I had Shabbos. Yeah, I can't think about Shabbos. So if a person's all worked up, so fasting will actually give him nachas ruach. He'll actually feel a little better because he'll feel like he's doing something. So then if he's the type of person, says the Mishnah Berurah, who's makbid when he has a bad dream, so then, okay, then he should fast. But if he's not that kind of person and fasting is going to make him more upset, so then he shouldn't fast on Shabbos, which is a very interesting idea over here. You just, again, to sort of appreciate the tension over here. The reason why it's problematic to fast normally on Shabbos is because there's a chiyuv oneg Shabbos. In certain circumstances, a normal, healthy person who obviously enjoys eating will find it more enjoyable, so to speak, to fast. And that if he's so upset about this dream, so for him, fasting will become a source of enjoyment. So this is not, you know, I did not mean to bring you to the point of halacha l'maisa, final psak. This is just through the Mishnah Berurah. Of course, you could look at more contemporary poskim who will discuss this more, if and when you ever have such a shaila. So, of course, you should ask, whoever your posek is as to what you should do. But I hope that it does give you, a sense of, the range of views. And what I'm describing over here is sort of a tension that brings us back all the way to the original two psukim that we saw. And that is, we have a dream. I don't know what it is. Is it good? Is it bad? I don't know what to make of it. And so therefore, what we're basically saying is the approach has to be measured. It has to be reasonable. You don't want to have an extreme reaction, but then again, you don't want to ignore it, particularly if the details of the dream are something that are of significance. So now we're going to shift a little bit and talk about an very, very interesting Gemara in Sanhedrin, which will lead us towards what appears to be a contradiction in the Shulchan Aruch. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says as follows: "Hamishanimitztaro Moshe Nichlo Aviv." A person is very upset about the fact that he knows that his father, who passed away, had money, but he doesn't know where his father's money is. He has no idea. His father did not leave explicit instructions in his will as to how to find the money. And he's upset about this because he knows his father was a wealthy man. And then one night, Uba Bala Chalom, he has a dream one night. V'amr lo kach v'kachin. And his father, somebody else, I know, appears him in a dream. Okay, here's how much money there is. B'makom plumin. And here's where it is. In the backyard, you have the woods. Go in the woods and go to the third tree on the right and walk three steps to the left and start digging. And you'll find the money. However, but it doesn't belong to you. The money that you'll find is actually already designated in Maisa Sheni. There was a Maisa like this for Amru, and the rabbis paskin, devechalomos lamalim v'lomaridim. He can find the money, he can take it, and the fact that he was told in the dream that that this money doesn't belong to you, he can ignore it, because you don't have to trust the dream. A dream is not halachically binding in that way. Now this is really fascinating, because unless this guy had some sort of memories that he suppressed, he had no idea where this money was. So he had no access to this money. He had no information as to where it was, how much it was. And in the very same dream in which he is told where the money is and how much it is, and in fact it was, he's told, but you can't have it. It's not yours. So we essentially tell the guy, you can go, you can dig, you can take the money, but you can keep it. And this is what it says in Shulchan Aruch. He's told in the dream that, your father had all this money, but it belongs to tzedakah. Doesn't change it. It doesn't matter. Because dreams again, literally, they're of no consequence one way or the other. The problem is, there seems to be another din in Shulchan Aruch which contradicts this. In Shulchan Aruch, Yerodeyasim, and Reish Yud, and as well as Shimon Lamadalar over here, we see that if a person has a dream, either that he took a neder, that there's a vow that he took in his dream, or he dreams that he was put in Chayrim. It's very unusual. A person has a dream that he was put in Chayrim. So in both of these cases, the Mechaber paskins that a Hatara is needed. He has to do either what's called Hataras Nadarim, at least according to one opinion. He doesn't come out straight, it's necessarily obligated. But he says, and when a person has a dream that he was put in nidui, like a type of cheirim, tzarech hatara.
And even if afilu imitiru lo b'chalom, and even if he had a hatara in his dream, that doesn't work. You need an actual hatara. So this is very strange. Now it seems that where the mechaber is contradicting himself, because he says when you dream that your father left you money, and you know exactly, and they tell you exactly where it is, but he says it's not yours. However, if you dream that you were put in cherem, so we say what? Tzar chatara. So which one is it? So there are several answers that are brought down in the poskim to resolve this question. The Tashbetz, which is found over here in source number 17, basically says as follows. He says, it may be true that when you have a dream and you are told something in that dream, there may in fact be consequences to that, and we wouldn't say necessarily in all cases lo malim ve lo moridin. The reason why we say lo malim ve lo moridin in the case of the Yerusha, that's the money that the guy's father left for him, is because we have another principle in halacha, that when a person has something in his possession, so it remains in his possession, he is what's called in halacha the muchzak, unless somebody brings absolute proof that it does not belong to him. So the fact of the matter is, even though the guy did not know where this money was, when he uncovers the money, if it's in his property, or even if it wasn't his property, when he uncovers it, so now he's now considered the muchzak. He takes the money, it's now his. So the fact that he has a dream, and the dream tells him, yeah, but it's not yours, no. The threshold that must be met in halacha, in order to be motzi mamon, to require a person who's the muchzak in the moment to give it up, is much higher than that. Hamotzi mechaver lav a raya, and this is not enough of a raya. A dream is not a raya. So, he had a dream. That's not enough. However, says the Tashbetz over here, when we're talking about, let's say, safek nidui, or when we're talking about a darim, so this already is a safek isser. A safek isser. And a safek isser already, you should consider the possibility that maybe there is some basis to that. Based on this, at the last Ma'ar Makom over here from the Netziv in his Hamek Sheila, he actually says, again, I'm running out of time, so I'm not going to read it inside, but it basically says that based on this, if a person has a dream, and in the dream they tell him, you know, the food in your refrigerator that you thought was kosher is actually treif, then maybe he should be choshesh, that maybe that's true. Right? In other words, over there we don't say mechem otzim v'chalev v'raya. Even though you could wonder why not, because he's going to have to throw his food out. But there's nobody being motzi that mamon. There may be a loss to him, but that's what's called a safek isser. So again, if this ever happens to you, please ask a shayla. I'm not telling you that if you have a dream tonight and they say everything in your house is treif, you got to throw it out. But the Netziv says, according to this explanation of the Tashbetz, that should be so. That should be true. And the Shuvasian actually gives a different answer, which would not lead to this same conclusion. And it's a very fascinating answer, and maybe in some ways sort of brings us back to where we started. And he says, again, you could see this is a long source, so forgive me, I'm not gonna read the entire thing inside. For those who have the Ma'ar Makomos, I hope you'll do so. It's not even such a difficult read, but just looking at the clock. So he basically says like this. He says, if there is validity to anybody's dream, so as we explained already, the Gemara says that a chalom is an echad mishishim of a nevuah, meaning that there is some sort of prophetic vision. It's not a good, you know, it's not like a real, you know, nevuah that a prophet would have, but there is something there. There's a trace of nevuah. So what does nevuah mean? What when we say nevuah, prophecy, so a nevuah means that this is some sort of prophecy that is impacting the future. The future. What a nevuah is not intended to do, and a nevuah does not mean that it's some sort of revelation of something that happened in the past. So, says the Shuvasian as follows, when a person dreams that there's money that's buried in your backyard, and here's exactly where it is, but it doesn't belong to you, it belongs to tzedakah, so the nevuah is not, or the dream rather, is not able to tell a person that because something happened in the past, you know, that now impacts you right now. That's about something in the past. And that's not what a nevuah is. Masha Ein Kein, if a person has a dream that he was put in cherem, so it could be that means something. And therefore, going forward, that impacts him in a way that requires an actual hatara. And so therefore, Shivasian explains that's the way we resolve this contradiction. The last couple sources I just want to share with you
touch upon a different topic. And this is something we could talk about for a long time, but we don't have time, so we won't. And that is the concept of dreams and how they may affect decision-making in halacha. And I'll say halacha as opposed to a person's thinking around Torah issues in general. I don't know about you. I don't think, I don't dream about Torah often enough. I mean, I do from time to time. And I'll even say that perhaps on two occasions, I don't think there were more, but I do think there were two occasions, I actually woke up with a void that actually made sense in the morning. I mean, if you ever dream a void in your dreams, chances are if you try to reconstruct it in the morning and say it over, it doesn't make any sense. But there were there were a couple of occasions that I was actually, I had a thought, but I'm talking about drusha material. I'm not talking about, you know, a psak halacha. And by the way, I just to state for the record, if I wouldn't paskin even while awake, not to mention when I'm sleeping. I'm actually reminded right now, you know, if you take a look in the Mishnah Brura, in Hilchos Rosh Hashanah brings down that, person is not supposed to sleep on Shabbos based on the Yerushalmi. I'm sorry, on Rosh Hashanah. The Yerushalmi teaches that. But he says that that the Arizal said that Dafka should sleep. And the Arizal would take a nap on Rosh Hashanah. And the Mishnah Brura says over there, I don't remember if he's saying by himself or he's quoting maybe from the Chayadim, Matafraim, I don't remember. But he says that halavai, we should be able to accomplish while we are awake one one-thousandth of what the Arizal was able to accomplish when he was sleeping. So there are certain yichidei skula that when they sleep, you know, they're exploring, you know, the universe of Torah in a way that's real, that's genuine. Most people can't do that even when they're awake. But there were individuals who actually paskin halachos based on dreams. There's a famous sefer called Shailos Tshuvos Min HaShemayim. It was written by one of the Bali Tosfos. And it is actually cited lahalacha by some later Rishonim, Achronim, the Radvaz and others. It was published, I think, by Moshe Rav Kook with footnotes and introduction by Rav Ruvin Margolios. Very, very fascinating. That basically the entire sefer was based on dreams that he would have. He would go to sleep at night, he would ask questions, and he'd wake up in the morning and he would record the answers that he was given. Now, I'm not, you know, don't try that at home. I'm not telling you to do this. But this is not folklore. This is actually, this really exists. The Radvaz over here in source number 19 tells us that somebody asked him a question whether he could take Rabbeinu Tam tefillin and convert them into Rashi tefillin. As you know, there's a machlokes between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. Actually, it's machlokes that preceded them, but we call it Rashi Rabbeinu Tam, as to what should be the Seder Parashios in the Tefillin. You know, what should be the order in the Tefillin. So, they had a different opinion, and that's why we have a concept of Rashi Tefillin Rabbeinu Tam. So, if somebody has Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin, he wants to change it. Can he do that? So, the Radvaz says, well, you know, probably, because it's technically it should be Mutter, but he said maybe it's not so respectful to do it, because after all, you're Mezalzel in the sheet of Rabbeinu Tam, because you're basically passing the Tefillin according to Rabbeinu Tam. But he said when he had the Shaila, he paskin that it was Mutter. And that night he went to sleep and he had a dream and they told him what he said was wrong. So when he woke up in the morning, he retracted his psak. So here you have the Radvaz basically telling you that I had a dream and in the dream I was told that my psak was wrong and I changed my psak. Very, very fascinating. It's only been a couple of months in Sukkot, not even. You remember that on Sukkot, so we take the Dalet Minim. Now we know that the three Minim, the Lulav and the Dasam and the Ravos, they're bound together and the Esrog is separate. So, I don't know if you can see me on your screen right now, but you know, you could all imagine when you take the Dalet Minim, what do we do? We take the Lulav and the Esrog and we put them together. We hold them together. Right? Everybody does that. When you make the Bracha and Halo, when you do the Nanu, we hold them together. If you can imagine, I'm going to stop my screen for one moment so you can see me here. Can you imagine a person who takes his Lulav and his Esrog? Here's my Lulav and here's my Esrog. And he goes like this. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam Asher Kiddushanu B'mitzvoso V'tzivanu Al Netilas Lulav. You would look at him like he's crazy. You look like he's crazy. What's that guy doing? Somebody take him to the side, and he doesn't. Nobody ever taught him the proper way to be mekayim the mitzvah Netilas Lulav, right? So what? So the answer is right. Where does that come from? Says the Beis Yosef. With this, we'll conclude. Should you hold them together or separate?
Davar zelon is bar be gemara velo be dibrei poskim. This question is not found in the Gemara, and it's not found in the poskim, meaning you don't find it in the Rishonim. It's fascinating. You look in the Rambam, you look in the Tur, you look in the Rush, and you look in the Rif. You don't find this. You would think it'd be a Mishnah, right? No. So what? Harav Menachem Meirikant, the Rikanti, writes in Parshas Emor, Tzorich lismoch esro gimshar haminim, sholo lahavrida min habinyan, v'sod zed nigla ilai b'chalom, belel yom tevrishon shalchag asukis. He says, you know how I know this is what you're supposed to do? Because I had a dream. On the first night of Sukkis, I had a dream. There was someone who came to me. He says who it was. Chassid Echad Ashkenazi Shmo Rabbi Yitzchak. And basically, the way he goes on to explain over here, based on Midrashim, that the Dalet Minim represent the letters of Yud Kei Vav Kei. And basically, in his dream, they showed him this very strange thing where he was basically writing the Shem Hashem with the final hey separated, and he looked at it very strange. Why would you do that? And he said, that's exactly what you do. So what is it what I do? So based on this, the Rikanti says that we should hold the Dalet Minim together. The Beis Yosef records this, and I challenge anybody here, even though you're all muted, I challenge anybody here to tell me, I was once in a shul, and I saw that was not their minhag. It's the minhag everywhere. The minhag everywhere is to hold the Dalet Minim together. What's the mucker? It's a dream. So it's very interesting. I don't want anybody to get the wrong idea over here. Obviously, I was most halachas, 99.9999% of the halachas that we learn are not coming from dreams. But even the fact that there are some familiar, some less familiar instances in which dreams have such a direct impact on what the halacha will be is something that is, you know, very, very interesting. That's a very intriguing idea. So in summary, we see that dreams are either of no consequence or of great consequence, depending on, as the Gemara says, whether it was a good dream or a bad dream, depending on it comes from a malach or a shade. We saw that if a person is very upset by a dream that they have, there certainly are things that they can do. If this happens on a Friday night, then it's about fasting on Shabbos. So we saw there are different opinions. You should contact your local Orthodox rabbi to decide what to do, if ever in that situation. But we should not be so quick to dismiss our dreams, but we should also be not so quick to get all worried and upset and concerned if we have a dream that concerns us or worries us, because in all likelihood, it could have been caused by something else, what we're thinking about, what we ate that night, all the other things that are on our mind. And as the Mishnah Berurah says, today we're not even b'kiyum. We're not even b'kiyum to be able to make these assessments and to properly interpret our own dreams. And so therefore, we should be very careful not to allow ourselves to become upset and distraught and depressed over a dream that we have. Thank you very much for joining me. I hope that everybody enjoyed this year. It's a strange way to end, but I wish everybody sweet dreams. Not, of course, that you should sleep during the will. Chas v'shalom, you should be up for him. But when you go to sleep tonight, you should all have sweet dreams. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Ray Rothwax. That was really wonderful. I'm unmuted. I'd like to let everyone applaud, but we...